Here's Higdon. It sits up nicely for Michael Higdon. And what a start for Motherwell. But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Son. Magnificent Malt. Stephen Robinson celebrates. Motherwell, 2-1. Could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr. And Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself and Pepe will react to the news that Tony Watt has left Motherwell to join Dundee United, preview games against Ross County and Greenock Morton in the Scottish Cup, and we'll see what else Motherwell-related we could discuss over the next half an hour or so. Mate, welcome along.
I'm looking forward to having a good half-hour rant about Tony Watt.
Yeah, it could go that way, to be honest. The news broke, 6 o'clock, Tony Watt has left. With immediate effect, it looks like he was actually training earlier on today with United, having had a medical in St Andrews yesterday. Pepe, we discussed briefly in the last podcast what the future would hold for Tony, given he had already signed a pre-contract agreement with Dundee United. I think we both agreed that it would be best for all parties if he was to leave immediately rather than continue to play a part for us while having signed for another Premiership club. That has been the case. A reported three-figure sum as well has been received in the way of compensation. The whole saga has only kind of dragged on about 3 weeks, but it feels a lot longer than that. I'm kind of glad to see the back of it.
Although I'm slightly concerned that you said that there was a three-figure sum that had been agreed. I would hope it would be a six-figure sum rather than a three-figure sum, but I'll put that down at a wee error on your behalf.
Thanks for connecting me. Yes, it was a six-figure sum.
It's a great bit of business getting £250 for Tony Watt. Where did you start? Obviously, we discussed it briefly last week. I really don't know what to say. I mean, there's this debate I've seen going on social media. Who's the bigger club? Now for me, how do you judge the size of a club? Because they've got slightly more fans than us, maybe a couple of thousand in a home gate. But my barometer of it is where we, as a club, where we have sustained ourselves across for the SPL. We've never been relegated. Dundee United, a yo-yo club. They're obviously getting money flung at them. It does leave a bitter taste in my mouth that Tony Watt was making out that he's found home and all that shite that he gave us and the celebrations and all sorts. But fair play to the club. I think we've seen the negative aspect it has in the whole squad with the likes of Jake Hastie, Declan Gallagher. That maybe we didn't really have a reaction to that because the fans weren't in when Declan Gallagher had signed his pre-contract. It was all really aimed in social media, but I'm glad it's came to a close. We've lost better players than Tony Watt. Now, that doesn't mean to say that he's not a huge loss, because anybody that says that he's not a huge loss is lying, in my opinion. This season, he's been brilliant. He was great last season, with the exception of not scoring goals. He's brought goals to his game this year, and for me, he was running away with Player of the Year. What's changed? I don't know. I think there may be a story comes out that there's some sort of fallout or something. What surprises me is that he's not taking a big money move abroad, even to like the USA or something like that. But there's obviously reasons behind it. Where does it leave us? Probably leaves us financially better off than maybe what we were. Get a big wage off the bill and potentially looking at signing a player. Again, I listened to Graham Alexander's press conference today just because of we've not played for so long, knowing that he's not going to give us any injury updates. But just to see what he said about Tony Watt, and at the end of it, he said he didn't necessarily need to think that we needed to sign a replacement for him. Well, I couldn't disagree any further with that. Yes, Van Veen has done well, but we've already discussed his kind of naivety at times with the suspensions, his injury record. And I think sometimes players like Sir Van Veen strive on the competition for places. In my opinion, we've got the likes of Shields, Amalusa, Woolery. You can fling Tierney into that equation. We're all wide players. Van Veen, for me, is the only really central striker that we have, a number nine. And Tony Watt fitted that, although he did kind of he fulfilled up numerous roles across the pitch just because of his sheer effort and endeavour on it. But I think this could be the difference between us finishing the top six, fighting for Europe, and not if we don't sign a striker.
It's certainly going to be an interesting one. I do believe that we had one eye on the fact that Tony Watt was leaving when we brought Jordan Roberts and at the end of last week. Now, before you jump in, I'm not suggesting for a second that Jordan Roberts, a player that's been on loan for the majority of the season so far and not featured as a starter very often whatsoever, is going to come in and suddenly pick up the mantle from Tony Watt. But I think that there's an element there where we're maybe looking at somewhat papering over the loss of Tony Watt, hoping that the likes of Connor Shields will step up. Maybe Jordan Roberts could reproduce some of the form that he had during his first loan spell at Firth Park and just get by. Alexander, I guess we've got to trust that he knows what he's doing and he has the belief in the players, given that he works with them day in, day out. My only concern is, are we saying that because of the constraints being placed under the manager? Has he got to say that? Has he signed a new contract last week and been told that there won't be any money available? Should it be the case that Tony Watt departs the football club? If that is the situation, then I don't see how we can sustain a challenge for a European place, because Hibs have already splashed out a fair bit of money already in the window to strengthen their side. Aberdeen are looking at the likes of Jamie McGrath at St Mirren, who I would say out with the top six is one of the kind of standout players in the league. I think these teams below us are going to get stronger. United have just taken a player off our hands that scored 9 goals, making him the top scorer in the Premiership. I agree completely is what I'm saying in terms of we do need a direct replacement for Watt. I don't know whether it's realistic that we're going to get someone that's going to score as many goals as Tony Watt has done in the first half of the season. But we need someone, and then to kind of reinvigorate the place as well, because as you rightfully mentioned, during this first half of the season, Tony Watt has been our best player. He's been absolutely integral in some of our victories in the first half of the season and has played a huge, huge part in getting us to fourth on the table. What has happened since Christmas Eve in no way diminishes that. And I think that there's always going to be a divide when a player leaves. There's certain supporters that will just say, no, I saw him, he's gone, he plays with someone else now, forget about him. Not follow them on social media and then that's the end of it. There'll be those that are absolutely baying for blood the next time we play Dundee United. And then there'll be an element of the support as well that'll wish him well and thank him for his contribution. I've got no idea what camp I'm in at this moment in time, to be honest with you. I feel a wee bit of bitterness towards him because I feel that the circumstances of his departure are pretty poor. I've just watched his interview with Dundee United Television and he basically comes out with the same sound bites that he used to do when he was being interviewed with Motherwell. And that kind of sums him up a wee bit. That's the kind of persona he is. He's going to try and endear himself to the fans of the club that he's playing for. If that works for him, then fair enough. I think we can't go without saying, when we're talking about Tony Watt, that he did a lot off the park that was very, very good. He seemed to buy into the community aspect of the football club, and that was nice to see. The bitterness for me lies though in the fact that I was maybe a wee bit sucked in by the fact that I thought that he had settled down roots, that I thought he was ready to commit to somewhere and kick on. I moved to Dundee United. It's taken me by surprise. And as I said in the last podcast as well, I thought it was just his agent putting a kite out there to see if he could attract some offers from down south and the likes, but that's clearly not been the case. I don't think it's a particularly ambitious move by Tony Watt. He's joining a side that, albeit they're only kind of 4 or 5 points off ourselves, they're sitting in the bottom half of the table. I would have really liked to see him play a big part in trying to secure that European place.
Listen, I can't disagree with anything that you've said. I'm firmly in the camp that I do actually, I really liked him. But as you say, when he's doing his food bank drives and stuff and really getting involved in community initiatives, which both you and I have also been involved with, it makes you think this guy's actually, it makes me feel as if I've been hoodwinked by him. Now, that probably sounds petty, the fact that I'm decrying him for doing some good deeds whilst he's here. But I don't know, I just feel as if he's totally up to piss at us. And I'm quite bitter about it, to be honest. And I understand the fans' anger. I understand the fans that will wish him. I don't think I would wish any player ill will. And I know some people say things in the heat of the moment, but I mean, at the end of the day, he has made a massive impact in the club, or we wouldn't be spending as much time talking about him. He's been pivotal to the position that we are in the league. As I said in the last time we briefly discussed it, fans were crying out for him to be the captain. I mean, let's not forget that he wore the captain's armband at Millwall, and he comes out with says all the right things at the time. But maybe that's just the type of guy that he is. He aims to please in the crowd that he's with at that particular time. And the easy thing to say is, well, do you know what? The club's bigger than that individual player. There's a couple of things that's been through my mind recently with regards to him. Does he look at the likes of Lauren Shankland and think, will he get a chance with Scotland at Dundee United? Do you think his chances are going to be increased there? That's probably him clutching at straws if he uses that as an excuse, because I think Steve Clark could use a Steve O'Donnell option. But the other thing that's really kind of coming at my mind is I can't blame the guy for moving for financial reasons, right? When you sit down and calculate it in your mind and you think to yourself, right, you can roughly work out you can't work it out, but you can have a guesstimate to what Millwall are willing to pay a guy like Tony Watt, probably go above and beyond what they've done for the majority of their squad, maybe with the exception of Liam Kelly, maybe matching what Liam Kelly's on, and Dundee United come in and offer more. You add that up over the 3-year contract that he signed, and it's a difference a huge amount of money. So for that reason, I understand. It's just the way that's happened. But on the financial side of things, it got me thinking about, we've been in this league for so long, how come Dundee United's finances are such at a stage where they can afford to pay a six-figure sum for a player that's only got 6 months left in his contract, and paying, for easiness of talking, double his wage. And you wonder if that's the difference of us having the likes of a Les Hutchison or a John Boyle or whatever. Is it the first time that we've really seen the constraints that a fan-owned club has? Now, at the end of the day, none of us would want us to go back to the stage where we're paying $600,000 for John Spencer, paying crazy money for Andy Gorham, Don Goodman, Jeb Brannan, Tony Thomas, players of that era, the Billy Davies signings. Yes, it was exciting at the time, but I was at rugby part of the day where we didn't know if we were going to have a Millwall, and I would never want to go through that. So I fully support that we've got a wage structure in place, and Tony Watt, in my opinion, has done brilliant, but not to the extent where we would break the bank to get him. So a couple of wee questions came into my mind about the Welsh Society, and then I quickly get brought back down to reality, thinking, do you know what? No, we've done right. Is he the type of person that deserves for us to break the bank? And the answer for me is no.
So we have to move on and consider life without Tony Watt in the squad. That starts in just over 24 hours' time at Dingwall with a trip to Ross County. Our first game back in with fans back in the stadium since the 18th of December. So the game falling on the 18th of January, basically a month without supporters being at the game. A difficult trip up the A9 in a Tuesday night in the winter time. Pepe, you're making it up there, and it's one that it's kind of hard to gauge. County finished the year pretty strongly. They looked like they might actually get a wee bit cast adrift at the bottom of the table, but that's not been the case. They're certainly competitive. They're a tough team to beat at home. I thought it was quite interesting that the players travelled up for the game today. So clearly, preparation is key in this, and I don't think you would really want to be making that journey 3-4 hours on a bus and then you're onto the park, especially with the situation with COVID in regards to changing rooms and stuff like that. It can be a wee bit more tricky just now. So the club taking a very professional approach to it. And I guess we'll potentially see some new faces as well. The likes of Ross Tierney has been training since the start of the year. I would imagine that he'll feature certainly in the 18, and with the introduction of 5 subs for the remainder of the season as well, you would expect that you might get to see the new signing in action. Other than that, it's kind of in Connor Shields step up and fill that void. Kevin Van Veen obviously finished 2021 in the high with a brace against Livingston. So plenty of question marks going into this one.
There is. I mean, as you say, it feels as if it's been so long since we actually played. And the midfield, for example, when we signed Liam Shaw, I actually think Tierney's probably going to feature more as part of the front three, going by interviews that I've heard about the boy. He's the one I'm kind of excited to see, because they've kind of bigged him up, haven't they? They've made out that he's a real good signing, and hopefully he hits the ground running, and he's a brilliant signing. The midfield for me is really going to be the one where I've got no idea who he'll pick. I suppose if you look at the back four as well, it seemed to be his preferred choice was Oyala and Saul as his two centre half pairs. But I mean, even McGabby's performances this year have certainly turned me into being. He has to play, so I'll be interested to even see that. I think the only positions that we'll be sure of is maybe 4 or 5 out of the team, and the rest I've got no idea. I'm really looking forward to the trip up. It's actually my first trip up to Dingwall. Maybe boys delighted he's kind of a few hours off of school, but he'll be at school on the Wednesday morning. So we'll see how he hardens up to that. But it's one of the games again where I'm really excited to begin up, but it's going to be a long journey back if we don't put in a performance. I think the players, though, and I think Graham Alexander as a manager will use the Tony Watt situation to drive the players on. He's going to say, look, Tony's left us now. Let's go out and show that we're not a one-man team. We certainly weren't a one-man team. Kevin Van Veen has shown that this season. But let's see how we cope with them. We can't turn it into comparing everything if we did have Tony Watt or if we didn't, because we've not got him anymore. And we move on from that. I'll be interested to. I think the front three, as you say, will be Shields, Watt, and Woolery. The rest, I'm not really sure. Slattery seems to have found himself on the bench. I don't know what his suspension situation is like. I would expect Liam Shaw to start, to be honest with you. I think that he's been signed to play games, and I'd be surprised if he doesn't start. The back four, I think we might still find Oyala on the bench, with O'Donnell, McGinley, Saul and McGabby starting in the midfield. As I say, could be any permutation that he could come up with.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think that the interesting thing about Liam Shaw is that the pedigree that everyone within the club has spoken about that he's got, clearly quite highly thought of. Celtic has been loaned out to get him some game time. Now, there's normally a debate comes when you loan a player from another Premiership club, particularly with it being either one of the Old Firm, because it's almost, right, we'll just take care of them for 6 months, a year, whatever, build them up to the level required, and then they'll go back and start performing against us. But I think you've got to be realistic about it as well. We wouldn't be able to shop in these markets and get players of that caliber. So to get the opportunity to have Liam Shaw for the remainder of the season, I think he can be a real asset to us. If it works out, then it's only going to be to our benefit, surely.
I mean, the thing for me is I've not seen anything of him, so all my research that I've done on him has been on fans forums and stuff like that. I wasn't really too interested with the Celtic supported to say. I was more interested in what Sheffield Wednesday fans had to say, and the majority of them appear to be quite complimentary in relation to his attributes and his performances with them. So certainly I think, I don't know what type of player really to expect. He's certainly not going to be a goal scoring midfielder. I think he's only scored one kind of career goal, but as you say, he is going to be probably high expectations for him. He's only a young guy. We've got to remember that, as is Tierney. But he's clearly here to play games, and I fully expect him to start tomorrow. I think Marco Harris's injury is pretty bad, and I think we all kind of he was up and down this season. We've obviously got, I mean, if we go through the midfield that could potentially be, we've got Barry Maguire, we've got Callum Slattery, we've got Liam Donnelly, Liam Grimshaw. Who else have we got off the top of my head? Liam Shaw, Tierney. So there's multitudes of midfielders there. You're going to come in a minute and tell me a couple that I've probably missed as well. But we really have got quite a bit to pick from. But let's not forget that we said this about centre-halves not too long ago. And before we knew it, we were down to only having one fit.
Generally, I would have the squad list in front of me and take great pleasure in correcting you, but I don't just now. So you're getting away with that one. Just a final one on the squad. We're sitting here recording on the 17th of January, so a couple of weeks before the window closes. What activity would you like to see in, and what activity would you expect to see in over the next couple of weeks?
Before I answer that, I'm going to correct myself, because I actually forgot, for me, the most improved midfielder that was Sean Goss. I actually watched the bit that the media team had done on Sean Goss, and didn't realise that he'd been through some medical issues and stuff like that. So I knew that I'd forgot a kind of a stick on one there. So apologies to Sean Goss for that one. I still think there's a fair bit of business to be done. I think we could be doing a couple of outgoings. I watched the Thistle game just to see how Robbie Crawford performed. And he performed exactly the same as what he did for us, and kind of goes missing in the games. I think it's maybe a few of the younger boys. There's another midfielder that could be that was in contention, Dean Cornelius. Does he potentially go and get a loan move to get some more time? But I definitely think we need a well-established striker. Now, whether that's a player that we're getting in and loan from elsewhere that's experienced and that maybe isn't getting game time to come in and even initially to start on the bench till he gets fit, I don't have a name. But I definitely think that we need something up there. Van Veen will get suspended again before the end of the season. If Van Veen gets suspended, who is your number nine? I love the timing of this because of the Lee Griffiths situation. For me, would I welcome Lee Griffiths to Fir Park as a person? It wouldn't be the type of person that I would want my son to have his name in the back of his shirt if we could get him to fitness and he's banging in the goals. So all of these negatives quickly go away. On paper, it looks like it would fit the bill of what I've just described. Do I want him? I'm too scared to say that I would take him for the backlash, but could I see it happening? nothing that would surprise me by Motherwell.
Absolutely not. No chance whatsoever. I'm not even going to engage in any more conversation about that, but Lee Griffiths, definitely not a no-go for me.
I'm not saying that I would definitely take him, and the reasons that I wouldn't take him are all off-field. I think
that is spilled onto the field now as well. It's been a long time since he's performed well. But then,
We've spent 20 minutes talking about Tony Watt. I can't class Tony Watt's off the field actions the same as Lee Griffiths, because
that would be absolutely smashing, Pepe. What today is right? We'll discuss Tony Watt. We'll be fairly balanced about it, and then you get us sued for comparing him to Lee Griffiths off the park.
No, that's not exactly what I meant. What I meant was we've turned a guy's career round. Now, all I'm saying is that he's got ability, but I'm 70% sure I don't want him. But there's a wee bit of me thinks that if he's the one that scores a winning goal against Celtic or Rangers or gets us to a cup final, I don't know. I'm probably going to be hated for saying this, and this will be my last ever podcast. But I'm not going to say I would want him. But if it turned good, then I would. No big slow and telling you I told you so.
Yeah, it's certainly under consideration. That's your last podcast. That's certainly the hottest take that I've heard from you. I just don't think that it's... I think it's a non-starter. And I don't think that the response from the support would be worth the risk as well. I think that it would be... I think Dundee fans warranted the idea of taking on Lee Griffiths because of his history with the football club. We don't have that, and I think it'd be one that would be met with a fair degree of anger now, and it's a shame because it wasn't so long ago that he was Scotland's talisman and such a huge player for the national team. He is still only 31, but it's a career wasted really, and I just don't see, I actually really struggle to see where Lee Griffiths goes from now.
I don't know. I know you said you weren't able to talk about it, but it was kind of a Daily Record to put a piece on about where does he go now. And it started off at kind of a thing like Dunfermline were mentioned with John Hughes, then it went down. Then the last one was Hutchison Vale.
Yeah.
That shows you. I mean, it's almost got reminiscent of the Derek Riordan type situation. You know what I mean? His antics off the field really did affect him on the park, and that goes to show that he just couldn't get his head back in it. So I'm going to take it back and say, in fact, no, do you know what? I don't want him. I think I've just seen his goals tally and outweighed and been a wee bit greedy with that and maybe made a bad call.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, mate. I'm sorry, that's one thing that we're going to need to disagree on tonight. Quickly, we'll go on and talk about the Morton game on Saturday at return to Firth Park. First time in 2022 that we'll be able to follow the team inside Firth Park. Not that there's been any games up until now in Firth Park, but yeah, Scottish Cup, fourth round. The game that we enter the Scottish Cup is always a big occasion. There's been plenty of special ones over the years. I was looking back for the programme actually on some of the kind of the famous ones since we won the Scottish Cup, obviously starting with the Aberdeen game at Pittodrie in 91, but days like when Tommy Coyne scored late on to beat Celtic at Firth Park, the highly emotionally charged game in 2008 against Hearts, Tynecastle coming back from 2-0 down. Even recent years, like the Chris Long hat-trick and a Saturday night at Dens, there's been loads to look back on, and it's the day that we could kind of dare to dream and almost plot a route to Hampden. We've got a tie with familiar opposition, despite the fact that we're not played in the same league as Morton for many, many years. We've come up against them plenty in recent times, normally getting the better of them, although there was the final game of the Ian Barraclough tenure, the 3-2 defeat at Capello in 2015. It's one that we should expect to win. There'll be the extra atmosphere booster, I suppose, of Dougie Emery in the dugout for Morton, and and he's three games in charge so far. They're unbeaten. It won't be straightforward. That was demonstrated last year when they took us all the way to penalties. But it's one that we'll be very, very confident at winning. And I fully expect us to get the job done. It should be a good crowd inside Firth Park. It's very reasonably priced. Let's go and do it. Let's put our names in the hat for the fifth round. And as I say, start to dare to dream of Stephen O'Donnell lifting that trophy above his head come May.
Yep, we beat Dundee United in the final and Tony Watt's face right in it. That would be the perfect scenario. Just on the Morton thing, I mean, the Dickie Emery factor does add to the kind of game, doesn't it? He's the kind of pantomime villain. I've seen a picture on Twitter of one of our support giving him petals, and it's a great kind of picture just to see the kind of a passion and the hatred and the fans to Dougie Emery. So it almost brings that kind of a derby feel of the game. I know it's not a derby, but just because he's involved, you would never have thought he'd have been the manager. But I fully expect us to go out and win. Yes, he's done well since he came in, but I would expect us to go out and beat any team in the Championship, particularly at Firth Park. But yes, for me, the Scottish Cup still holds a kind of special place. Obviously, myself and Andy Peaver at a certain age that we're fortunate that we vividly remember the times in 1991. And I'm at a different stage in my life now where I'm hoping and praying that I get to live that with not just guys like you, but my wee boy and my nephews and stuff like that. There's always that dream there that you have that kind of great experience. We kind of sampled a wee bit of it when we got to the two cup finals, and I think that would really bring home Graeme Alexander to the fans if we got a real, real decent cup run. Now, I mean, we've spoken about this quite a bit. The time at Salford City where he actually got him to the Trophy final, where he actually got sacked before he got a chance to play the final due to COVID. So he's got it in his locker that he knows the importance of cup games, and it would just be great to get a really good run and a good finish in the league, top six finish. And again, we've no longer done the review of the year, and it really would be a phenomenal season considering the Hamilton Accies game where we get trounced at New Year. So I'm right up for the game, fully expecting us to win, and hopefully we're in the hat. The only thing, do you know what I really miss though? I don't know if this is even beyond your years, but I used to remember on a Saturday night after the Cup, you had a special sports scene on a Saturday night, and the Scottish Cup draw used to be on the Saturday night after the highlights, and you used to love watching it live, but now you can never tell when the bloody draw is.
Yeah, I can almost remember and I don't think that's gone back too far, to be fair. We used to do the draw on the Saturday night results show on BBC, or it would be on the radio from one of the Saturday 3 o'clock games. So quite often you'd be travelling back home from an away fixture, and you would learn who was up next in the draw. But I think now I think BBC have got it, Premier Sports have got it, and the fixtures are so drawn out. Hibs play Cove Rangers on Thursday night to kick things off, and I think it goes right through to, I think it's a Monday night. So it could be until the Monday that we actually learn our fate, should we go through. We've got to deal with Morton first, but yeah, that takes you to the last 16, and who knows what could happen. A few favourable draws, and you've got a chance. I don't know about you, but I feel like it's been a while since we've really had the chance to enjoy the Cups as well. Even the League Cup at the start of the season, it felt there was almost a novelty factor attached to it because we were just back at the football. Last year's League Cup, we only had one game, and obviously fans weren't in. The Scottish Cup, we had a wee bit more, but again, it felt almost kind of a bit surreal watching on the laptop rather than actually being there. And even when we went all the way to penalties, it certainly didn't hold the same the same drama and the same nerve-shredding experience as, for instance, the St Mirren game had a year prior to that, where we came back from 4-1 down at half-time to level at 4-4, but we were losing penalties. This feels like it'll be the first opportunity to have a proper cup experience, and I think we should really enjoy that as well.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it does. The Motherwell players only need to look at the Steelman pins, the amount of pins that's been sold being the 91 stuff, and they're all, apart from one player, they're all legends and welcome back to the club at any point. Obviously, unfortunately, we've lost a couple of them, but to make yourself a legend at a club, and I mean, look, sometimes it's now got to the stage where some of the, maybe the younger element of the support, even probably like yourself, maybe think that there's too much celebration of it. But for guys like Kevin Van Veen, he's been a kind of journeyman across. He's been at Scunthorpe for a long time. But imagine he comes up and scores a winner in the Scottish Cup final. He's got the keys of Motherwell for the rest of his life. So there's that kind of the total love and admiration that the fans give these players. I mean, guys like Colin and Neil probably up to piss with it a wee bit, right enough. But when they come back to Motherwell for things like this, like Nyholt, do you know what I mean? Guys that will be welcome back to the club with open arms. So that incentive's always there, and it's always there in me as well that's when you make memories as football fans, and I just hope that this year's our year.
Yeah, certainly, and I think we're all really looking forward to first and foremost being back inside Fir Park. But to begin that, we're in good form. I think there's a lot of confidence at playing, especially at home just now, because we've turned Fir Park into a happy hunting ground, really, with the exception of the defeats against Rangers and Celtic. More often than not this season, it's been very positive. Even in defeat against Hibs, I think we're all left thinking that it was a much different model performance from what we had in previous times, where we turned in some really poor performances at Fir Park and didn't really take advantage of the fact that we were playing at home. So, yeah, plenty to look forward to. And it begins this week, only 24 hours to go to the trip to Ross County. So here's hoping we can kick on, and we'll reconvene after these two games and see where we're at. But thanks very much for your time tonight, mate.
It's just something that I forgot to mention. It's something that I kind of bring up quite regularly in relation to pricing for games and stuff like that. So for a change, I'm actually going to take my hat off to Ross County. Although I'm firmly in the belief that it should be 20 head of skull for the games, and kids are a fiver. So really, they have met that, because it's £25 for me tomorrow, and my wee boy gets in free, which I think is a great thing. Taking into consideration the cost of travel and stuff like that, I think it's a good gesture for Ross County, a club that probably quite like us are kind of community-minded. So I think it's quite important that you point out some clubs' good things, and it might be something that would be good to see Motherwell emulating. I don't know what the pricing structure is for kids, but I was really happy, obviously from a financial point of view, but from a football point of view, to see a club taking that on. They had all different types of pricing structure for all different age groups and stuff like that. They've got to be commended for that.
Absolutely, and safe trip to every Motherwell fan making the long journey up north tomorrow. A challenging one, and possibly not one of the most appealing pictures. Well, certainly there's been plenty of good days on the train and such like to Dingwall, that's for sure. But a Tuesday night in the middle of January, it's not the most attractive of fixtures, but fair play to everyone that's making the trip, and hopefully the team respond with a really good performance. As I say, we'll be back at the start of next week to recap on the game against County and also the cup tie against Morton. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We will be back next Monday. Until then, thank you. Goodbye.
See, I think there are two ways in which people are controlled. First of all, frighten people, and secondly, demoralise them. An educated, healthy, and confident nation is harder to govern. And I think there's an element in in the thinking of some people. We don't want people to be educated, healthy and confident, because they would get out of control.